and souls were scarred by bouts of poverty, but he also knew some of the pleasures of pre-industrial American society. The country was then experiencing what he would later call a sudden and almost universal turning of men from the old handicrafts towards our modern life of machines. There were still people in Clyde who remembered the frontier, and like America itself, the town lived by a mixture of diluted Calvinism and a strong belief in progress. Young Sherwood, known as Jobby, the boy always ready to work, showed the kind of entrepreneurial spirit that Clyde respected. Folks expected him to become a go-getter. And for a time, he did. Moving to Chicago in his early 20s, he worked in an advertising agency where he proved adept at turning out copy. "I create nothing, I boost, he said about himself, even as, on the side, he was trying to write short stories. In 1904, Anderson married and 3 years later moved to Elyria, a town 40 miles west of Cleveland, where he established a firm that sold paint. "I was going to be a rich man. Next year, a bigger house, and after that, presumably, a country estate." Later, he would say about his years in Elyria, "I was a good deal of a Babbitt, but never completely one." Something drove him to write. Perhaps one of those shapeless hungers, a need for self-expression, a wish to find a more authentic kind of experience that would become a recurrent motif in his fiction. And then, in 1912, occurred the great turning point in Anderson's life. Plainly put, he suffered a nervous breakdown, though in his memoirs he would elevate this into a moment of liberation in which he abandoned the sterility of commerce and turned to the rewards of literature. Nor was this, I believe, merely a deception on Anderson's part, since the breakdown, painful as it surely was, did help precipitate a basic change in his life. At the age of 36, he left behind his business and moved to Chicago, becoming one of the rebellious writers and cultural bohemians in the group that has since come to be called the Chicago Renaissance. Anderson soon adopted the posture of a free, liberated spirit, and like many writers of the time, he presented himself as a sardonic critic of American provincialism and materialism. It was in the freedom of the city, in its readiness to put up with deviant styles of life, that Anderson found the strength to settle accounts with, but also to release his affection for, the world of small-town America. The dream of an unconditional personal freedom, that hazy American version of utopia, would remain central throughout Anderson's life and work. It was an inspiration. It was a delusion. In 1916 and 1917, Anderson published two novels mostly written in Elyria, Windy McPherson's Son and Marching Men, both by now largely forgotten. They show patches of talent, but also a crudity of thought and unsteadiness of language. No one reading these novels was likely to suppose that its author could soon produce anything as remarkable as Winesburg, Ohio. Occasionally, there occurs in a writer's career a sudden, almost mysterious leap of talent, beyond explanation, perhaps beyond any need for explanation. In 1915-16, Anderson had begun to write, and in 1919, he published the stories that comprise Winesburg, Ohio, stories that form, in sum, a sort of loosely strung episodic novel. The book was an immediate critical success, and soon Anderson was being ranked as a significant literary figure. In 1921, the distinguished literary magazine The Dial awarded him its first annual literary prize of $2,000, the significance of which is perhaps best understood if one also knows that the second recipient was T.S. Eliot. But Anderson's moment of glory was brief. No more than a decade, and sadly, the remaining years until his death in 1940 were marked by a sharp decline in his literary standing. Somehow, except for an occasional story like The Haunting,